listening to Guitar Goddess Radio with Azina, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, this is Zena here with Guitar Goddess Radio, and you are in for a treat today. We have a very special guest in the studio. We have the amazing Brianna Alexis. Brianna is a professional guitar player and songwriter based in Los Angeles, and her musical journey began when she started studying guitar with the late jazz guitarist Ted Green. Welcome to the show, Brianna.
Hi, thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. We're so excited to have you. You know, Brianna and I kind of go way back. She was on our very first Guitar Goddess Awards when we started 7 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
Right? I know.
I was thinking about that. I'm like, 7 years. How could that be?
I know. Yeah. Like, time just flies.
And that was a blast.
Oh my gosh. We had so much fun at the Gibson showroom.
I love that place anyway. It's my home away from home.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're amazing.
And they're family. It's very intimate there, and it was a perfect place for the opening. The purple carpet.
Wasn't that fun?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so in love with the purple carpet. Yeah. Like, we're going to do that again when we have the Guitar Goddess Awards.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, next year. So
exciting.
I'm really, really excited to get that going. And, you know, what a pleasure to have Tish there from Daisy Rock Guitars. I mean, my goodness, that woman's such a trailblazer in designing guitars and just all the women that she's introduced guitar to, you know, by developing her line.
Yeah.
So that was incredible as well.
Yeah. And I love the fact that she's grown in her journey, starting out as a punk bassist and just knowing guitars, knowing business, being a musician. You have to respect all levels of where she comes from.
Absolutely. That's why we couldn't start
Triple Threat.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we couldn't start Guitar Goddess without honoring her first, right? Like, she's like the mama of the movement. But she's really incredible. What I want to talk about you and your journey. Like, let's just talk about, you know, how you got started. You know, you have just a plethora of information to share with us. And, you know, you started with jazz with the late Ted Green, and you have done everything.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how you got started, you know, from playing jazz, going all the way to rock, to doing, you know, movie soundtracks and, you know, putting together bands and everything. Just tell us a bit about how you got that going.
A lot of years. Now I'm aging myself. I actually started playing rock, but quickly moved to jazz. Once I was under instruction by my jazz teacher, and he just turned me on to a whole other world. So that developed really quickly. Like, I went into that. But, you know, I mean, I started with on the Sunset Strip doing playing metal with a lot of the hair bands in the 80s, and I had an all-girl band. I was in a lot of all-girl bands back then. And that was, you know, I always had one foot out. I had my love for what it was. I was young, it was exciting. I mean, the Sunset Strip during that time was, you could barely look down the strip and all you saw was hair. You literally from, like, at that time, Gazzari's to down to the Whiskey, and there was, you know, the Rainbow and all the clubs in between, and you literally had to drive about, you know, 3 to 5 miles. Basically, if you drove the strip, you were just cruising, because that's what you wanted to do, is see your friends along the boulevard. And that was really exciting for somebody, you know, young, up-and-coming guitar players and lots of boys. And, you know, although from the behind, you couldn't really tell if it was a boy or a girl. But the other side of me, the Orange County side and the side that of the student, I kept wanting to keep pushing, keep growing. And a guitarist by the name of Jeff Thomas turned me on to jazz. And from then, it was just my love. So, you know, I try to incorporate some of that in metal, and it's just, the only thing you can do is play as fast as you can and put on distortion and try and take it from metal, but wasn't happening. I got sought after really quickly. You know, and I still play it. I love it. You know, that's my roots. But jazz has my heart.
Yeah.
Jazz and fusion has my heart. Gosh, and now I lost track of your question. How'd I get started?
Yeah.
So on the business end, as any musician knows, up and coming, you also have to have a job, and you have to pay the rent. So I lived very close to Randall Amplifiers at that time, and I just knocked on the door. I just thought that'd be a cool place to work.
What?
And this was a day where it was not online, yeah. and that you actually, they saw your resume, you could hand it. And I, in Randall at that time, Don Randall, a lot of people don't know, but Don Randall was in, I think, World War II with Leo Fender. And Leo Fender was the engineer, and Don Randall was the businessman. And I keep this man's
wow.
name alive because it was so monumental in my journey, and a lot of people don't know the history of Randall Amplifiers. I mean, Leo Fender and him were partners. It was right place, right time. I knocked on the door. It was very mom and pop run, and it was, they have everything there from, you know, production to distribution. And I worked for Don Randall. I worked for the president. And, at that time, Bill Acton, who just retired from Gretsch,
yeah.
and has been working all these years
wow.
as A&R director, he sort of also took me under his wing. So I learned how to do A&R. So that was really pivotal because, you know, even back then I learned about branding
mm-hmm.
and I learned about artist relations, and that's why I have endorsements, and I just sort of know the business end mm-hmm. as well as being a guitarist, because even early on back then, before we had social media, I knew that I had to know both sides. I had to you have to know about the record label at that time, record labels, publishing, licensing, manufacturing, endorsements, because then you actually got paid for endorsements and you could, you know, be sponsored and things like that. It's changed over the years a little bit, I just think because of the demand. But so that was really an important part in my development. At lunchtime, I'd go back on the amplifiers for shipping, and I would practice. I'd put my headphones on, I'd plug into a Walkman,
wow.
and I would practice during my lunch hours and socialize with all the people that worked there that were all musicians mm-hmm. and just, hung out with players and learned both sides.
I love that. I love that so much, because what I hear a lot of when I talk to a lot of up-and-coming guitarists is, you know, yeah, I'm playing, I'm practicing, and, you know, I'm playing out, but you don't hear a lot about the music end, or yeah. Business end is so important.
Yeah.
You know, it's really important for you to get out there and to market yourself
right.
and to understand how to work with
right.
these companies.
Right, because they want to know that you're also going to be dependable to show up.
Absolutely.
And, you know, even then, I never really, and it was sort of more uncool and more square, because I never really partied, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't. It was, I took it too seriously.
No, you didn't. You were rocking.
I looked like I was a badass, but I really was, you know?
But how many people do we meet and, you know, you really find out about their life behind the scenes, and it's like, I wasn't really partying, you know? I was practicing and I was working and I was networking, you know? It's not yeah. always sex, drugs, and rock and roll like we think it is.
No, but I think that takes I mean, anybody that is under the influence and playing and soloing, I mean, I think that takes mad skills, because I could never do that. I'm like, there's no way. I'd forget my parts. I'm like, you know, and I think the reality is there is an image that you have to sort of keep up in that world a little bit. You couldn't party that hard and still tour.
Right.
I mean, you know, even young, I mean, you know, youth does take you a long way, but at the same time, I'm like, there's, you know, you're doing 90-minute sets and mm-hmm. you're on the road and, you know, especially being female, what if I forget my products and all?
Right, right.
I'm like, we got that on top of it, right? So, and I was always the band leader.
Okay.
So I just had to be responsible for signing the contracts,
mm-hmm.
you know, making sure everything was taken care of, that even promotions was taken care of, flyers.
Right.
You know, back then we just used to, you know, you make 100 flyers and you post flyers everywhere.
Exactly. Everywhere you go, you know, you have postcards, everybody
you
meet, my show, you know.
Saturday night before, you go and hand out, you go on the Sunset Strips. I can't even tell you how many times I did that. And you just hand out flyers to everybody.
Wow.
That's what you did.
That's exactly how it rolled, you know, and the younger players, they have no concept of that because they go and they post on Facebook,
yeah.
you know, an
right.
event on
yeah.
on Facebook, and they send out a few Instagrams and a few tweets,
right.
and then they're like, why is no one here?
Actually, that goes probably further, you know,
yeah.
than trying to personally push your flyer to everybody. But back then, the one thing that there was a lot of support. You
yes.
know, a lot of people, I think, knew the local bands,
mm-hmm.
and there was that networking. It was the word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You
absolutely.
Know? So,
absolutely.
And then after Randall, they sold Randall to Casio Keyboards, and Don called up Leo Fender and said, you know, hey, give this girl a job. So I got a job in research and development in the amplifiers at Fender, based on a phone call, after I worked at Roundup for like 2 years. And then I worked at Fender in R&D and got to know those engineers. And they let me solder circuit boards and
do
all that fun stuff. This was in Brea over, well, Fullerton, I guess, technically where their headquarters were. And I was there for 2 years before I decided to move to LA to go to music school. Yeah.
Wow. What an incredible background you come from. Like, you know, usually it's like, oh, yeah, I played and I did a whole bunch of bands. You're like, no, I did business. I took care of business first.
I had to pay for those amps. I was like, I'm a gear freak. I'm like, you know, they didn't give us that stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it'd be like half off, but I still, you know, I had to pay for it. Right. I mean, that was more important than clothes or anything else or rent. So I'm like, and actually to move, I had so much gear. I had acquired so much gear to move to L.A., I had to sell my gear because I got it for half off. Mm-hmm. So then I had to sell it in order to get an apartment and to move to LA. And, you know, so I sold a lot of, you know, big, huge 412 amplifiers.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously?
I had eight 412 cabinets and four heads because they stacked up like a wall behind me. And I even had dummy cabinets. I had cabinets that were you know, had nothing in them but the lights turned on just for my wall of amplifiers on the stage. And that was my pyrotechnics.
I love that so much. Now, what did your parents think of this? Like, I just got to go back there. Like,
so supportive.
Really?
And the reason being is because, I mean, we did photo shoots that we would in our garage with, you know, black trash paper bags up, you know, to make it look like a backdrop. And just my mom was my first roadie.
Aww.
She would work all day and then, you know, drive to LA and carry my gear for me. So supportive. And I think so because I was so focused and she'd see me practicing. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I didn't party. So she knew that I had my head on my shoulders. You know, and I think with that, and I come from a musical background. My father was a concert pianist.
Okay.
So I think that was just always in the genes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, my band would stay over at my house. We'd do rehearsals there. I think parents rather have you at
absolutely
home and seeing what you're doing and feeding us, and rather than having you go somewhere else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah,
that's really, really cool.
I don't think without her support, and my mom is a warrior herself. I mean, I couldn't have done anything I've done without her complete support. So,
what a blessing.
Yeah.
It's such a blessing.
Yeah.
You know, it's very challenging for kids who are really into music and to have that disconnect with the parents where they really don't understand, you know, why you're banging and making all this noise in the garage and why you have a house full of kids, you know, all jumping around and playing instruments, you know. So you were really blessed and how wonderful that your parents were so supportive and that your house was the place to be.
Yeah, right. It was, you know, and it's... So, because it was an open door, and you know, music is, you know, it helped me in every area of studying, you know, and academics, because just the memorization, numbers, reading, you're reading another language, you're learning about the theory, you know, and studying jazz, to me, I mean, the people that I was hanging out with were so. I mean, just amazing human beings, amazing, just prodigies. Absolutely. I was so lucky. And you know, I was always the worst musician in the group. And that's sort of where you want to be.
That's the best place to be.
Yeah. I mean, I was always embarrassed thinking, oh, my God, why are these people hanging out with me?
Yeah,
But
I'm there with you.
They saw the effort.
Yes.
And they saw that it was sincere and that I gave 110%. And so I think in a male world, especially in jazz, I was accepted, you know, and my school was like a mini Berkeley. I went to Dick Grove School of Music. It was only around for 13 years.
Okay.
And it, Dick Grove used to play with all the, I want to say Johnny Carson, but I may be incorrect with that. But it's when they had live bands and they had big bands. And so he comes from that school and sort of created his own theory of teaching. And turned into this phenomenal jazz school. But I think the timing was just off. You know, this was, you know, mid-'80s to 90s, and it was around for 13 years, and you're competing against MI during, you know, heavy metal era. But the Steve Lukathers and Scott Hendersons and Mike Stearns, they all came as guest teachers and, you know, shared that bond. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah. So, and that was another pivotal life in my musical career. I know.
I want to talk about something that you and I share in common, which is left-handed guitars.
Yes, my Southpaw sister.
Yes, Southpaw sisters forever. Yes. You know, it was love at first sight when I met you, and I was like, oh my God, she plays left-handed like me. You're a freak too. I love it. Tell me about your journey as a left-handed guitarist. Let's just talk about that because... First of all, I want to say to all the music stores out there, you got to have more than one in your inventory because there's more than one of us that play left-handed. And please,
I'm getting chills. I'm getting chills. First of all, I'm talking to a lefty. Second of all, it's gear.
It's gear. Yeah, we're gonna go. We're gonna go there with the gear. But yeah, let's talk about your journey as a left-handed guitarist. Did you start?
Yes.
You started lefty.
I could not do. I'm not ambidextrous.
Okay. Okay.
I do, you know, and which is so bizarre to me. When I first started playing, because people bat left or right or whatever, and to me it was crazy because this felt natural, but then I don't do anything with this hand.
Right.
And this is the hand that's like, you know, you're moving. So to me that's still so bizarre to me because this hand is so fluent with guitar playing, but I guess it's just that rhythm hand. But at that time, I couldn't afford, and there wasn't even left-handed guitars, so everything was flipped upside down.
Yeah.
And, of course, I would pick things that were universal with the cutaway.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the Flying V.
Flying V, yeah.
Flying V. I had an SG cutaway, same side. And then I had an Aria Strat that was actually given to me from a friend. So I kept that, but that was very uncomfortable because... I couldn't even afford to have the electronics moved. So I'm up here.
Wow.
And girl. Your arms up here, so it would turn the volume off.
Yeah.
Cool. All these things. So what I would do, my guitar, I crazy glued the volume up before knowing at that time that, you know, I would just let it hum and feed.
Yeah,
right.
Amp, yeah, the amp and fix it.
Or put my hand on the strings because I didn't. These are just the crazy embarrassing stories that you guys tell.
It's not embarrassing. You know, this is why it was so important we have to tell these stories because, you know, even though there are more left-handed guitars now, they're still custom. Every guitar I have, and I have 22, they're all custom.
They're expensive.
They're
and
expensive,
the ones you want,
yes.
You know, there's a place I think in Texas, it's Southpaw Guitars.
Yep.
And they have huge variety. But, you know, all the awesome guitars, the Gibsons and the Fenders, and I mean, that's what I always go to is they're pricey.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, I mean I have about 15 guitars that I've had over the years and I still have my three original flipped.
You
do? The rest, yeah.
Oh,
I
awesome.
Have my pink Flying V.
Oh, that pink Flying V is amazing. Like I must see that and I must play it.
That was custom actually.
Really?
Okay. That was my first totally custom. I had an Erickson neck. He was a Luther from Garden Grove.
Okay.
He may still be around. It had like a Jackson headstock.
Mm-hmm.
And then the body was a custom body. It was smaller in size because of the weight. And it had a pink pearl finish. And it has one of the original black Floyd Rose, and there wasn't a lot of the original ones that were in. I think the black ones just came out, the black hardware,
right?
Those just and so it has all that original. I had an EMG pickups just came out, the pickups had just come out, and I had those, and it's super high gain and it feeds back all over. But I played so many shows on the Strip with that guitar.
That's awesome. It looks amazing.
I did a lot of photo shoots with it too.
Right.
I mean, I've had with behind my stacks of amplifiers. So, no, that's an awesome guitar. That's a really cool. I forgot. Yeah, we could. I got to look at your collection.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I have like 22 guitars and they're all custom. Everyone is custom.
Wow. Oh.
They're all custom. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
You know, you're like, I want this guitar.
So, what was your first guitar?
My first guitar was a Fender Stratocaster.
Oh.
And it was a Mexican Fender Stratocaster back when those weren't cool.
Right.
You know?
Was it a righty?
It was a righty.
So you flipped it.
I flipped it. Yeah, and it sounded terrible.
Yeah.
It never stayed in tune. I would play it. It would be in tune for like a minute, right. And then it would sound awful, you know, and it feedback as well, and I'm just like, this is not happening.
Right.
So instead of getting a new car, I saved and got a guitar.
I was just going to say, how did you swing that back then? Right. Because that was a lot of money.
Yeah, it was a car.
Wow.
It was a car. So instead of having a car, I had a guitar.
Wow.
But, you know, those are the things that you do when you're a left-handed guitarist.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, otherwise, you know, you're sounding terrible and you know, or you're just faking it. You're
right.
Like, okay, let me turn it down and then turn it up and turn it. You know, you're doing all these theatrics on stage trying to make this thing sound good when really it should just go in the heap.
Yeah.
But I love that guitar, though. Like,
do you still have it?
I don't have it anymore.
Oh, okay.
I was able to sell it. I spent a lot of money fixing it to get it to sound good.
Right.
And then I sold it.
Oh my God.
But you know how that goes.
Yeah.
You know, you have all this gear and, you know.
You traded. You traded back then. You
absolutely.
Know, before Craigslist,
yes.
There was a recycler.
Absolutely. You got it. You
and
got
I'm
it.
From Orange County, so it was Orange County Recycler. That's, you know, buy and sell and trade. And a couple things I held on to, but you know. That's what you had to do.
I still have a Seymour Duncan amplifier.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, my God. It's like a pedal board and an amplifier all in one. Like, it's incredible.
Those are my peeps.
Yeah, yeah.
Kathy Duncan and Seymour.
Kathy Duncan, there you go.
They're one of my endorsees, and I am a proud artist of Seymour Duncan.
Great company. Yeah. Great, great,
great
company.
Great people.
Absolutely.
Santa Barbara.
Yes.
Just, you know, solid as a rock.
You know, we're so lucky here in California. We have so many manufacturers.
The resources, yeah.
They're just...
Although they're moving out.
I know.
But, you know, but a lot of them are still here. And, you know, I was sad to see my Fender family move to Arizona.
Yes.
But I'm still... I see them every year at NAMM.
Yeah.
I still see my engineers. Bobby D, got to throw a...
a shout out.
Shout out to Bob. Thank you to Bobby D. He was an engineer that I've known all these years. And a lot of them are just now retiring. But, but they still have their guitar factory in Corona,
mm-hmm.
their custom shop there. A lot of people are moving, so.
You know, it's the nature of the beast, you know.
But we are lucky we are in the capital of Guitar Haven.
Absolutely.
And all the resources, you
know. Oh, my gosh, the pedals alone. Like, talk to me about your setup. What are you using right now? What's the new pedal board?
You know what, I got to dust. I have to really... To reprogram myself, because when I get absorbed in one project, like I just redid my whole home studio.
Okay.
I just upgraded everything. So now my pedal board has been, everything's all dusty, so I put it in its case, its Pelican case, and now
Pelican.
I have to visually see what I have on this layout, because I revamped it about a year ago. So my setup, I run pretty clean from my, I have two Fender Hot Rod Deluxe custom. I run them in stereo,
mm-hmm.
and I run them clean. Well, just a little distortion, and then I have a Maxim distortion pedal, which I love. Just it's a phenomenal pedal. I have a I need to visualize this in my head.
There's just so many. Like, tell
and
me
I
your favorite.
I've swapped them out. My favorites.
Your favorite pedals.
That Maxim is my favorite. I had a Bogner.
Oh,
the red,
Bogner, love.
The red,
yes, yes.
One before that. I can't even, I'm visualizing what I have in my cabinet here. Just because I have a lot of, can we come back to that?
We can We'll come back to that. My favorite pedal is the Robotalk. Love with that pedal.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just, like, I will never get rid of that thing. It was stolen. Like, I was on a gig. You know how that happens.
Yeah.
Your stuff it grows legs and walks away, and you're like, okay, oh my gosh. But I had to get another one because I'm like, I love that pedal so much, especially through a diesel amp. I'm just like,
Oh,
you know?
A diesel girl.
I'm a diesel girl.
Yeah.
I love those
amps. That's a lot of power.
It is a lot of power.
That's
but when I'm rocking out, you know, I really want that power.
Right.
Those are my main things that I'm loving right now.
Yeah.
I love the orange amps as well.
Okay.
And what amps, I see you still have, I was checking out your gear, you still have a lot of amps, girl.
I have a lot of amps. The one that I'm using now, I sort of revamped everything. I'm my good friend Scott Henderson, jazz fusion guitarist, legend.
Mm-hmm.
He sat down with me. And we went over all of my stuff. I was so unhappy. I had come out of a gig, and I was just crying. I was so unhappy with the way everything was going. So we went through my whole system. We went through a rehearsal studio, went through everything. And I basically mimicked what I bought everything he had. He turned me on to Sur, John
yeah.
Sur,
yes.
and Sur Guitars and Sur Amplifiers. And I'm playing right now a custom audio head, which is designed by Sur and Bradshaw. It's sort of, I think, a combination of one of their amplifiers, sold through Sur. And it's a 100-watt head, and
okay.
so that's
wow.
what I use for the big. It's more power than mm-hmm. I'll ever need. and I actually, for recording, I use that through a box, and then I use simulated cabinets. Just because I'm in my place, it's not like I'm not in the studio, I can blast cabinets. So everything is done through my computer.
Okay.
So that is my studio setup.
Okay.
And then my live setup, I use my Fender Hot Rod Deluxe in stereo.
Nice.
So I use that through, and that's, again, those little guys, you know, on like one or two is fine
oh,
for
yeah, that's
any
good.
Gig.
Oh, yeah.
Really loud. Yeah.
For sure.
And then
sure.
I have an old modded Laney that's, you know, it's the sound of the 80s metal, and that mm-hmm. that's an awesome amp. And then I was playing Carvin for a while, V3. What else do I have?
You have a lot of gear.
Yeah, I have a lot of gear. So a lot of guitars, a lot of pedals. Like, I'm just thinking about what I have now because I swap things, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's pretty much my current setup.
Cool,
yeah.
cool. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Now, what do you think, like, coming from kind of the old school, what do you think about these new pedals that are coming out where you can program them into your iPod and, you know, run it that way through your amp?
I'm old school.
Yeah.
I don't do it. Even it came, it took a long time for me to even open up to plugins.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and I was doing a lot of comparing,
mm-hmm.
Going back and forth EQing. Does it sound like that? Does it sound like the Lexicon? You know, like for me, I do that for practicing, but not mm-hmm. so much recording. And I know there's amazing sounds and people can get, you know, I mean, I look at some of the stuff and my friends record on and they'll tell me what they played on. And I was like,
yeah.
you're kidding. Like I my ears. And I think when you know it and
yeah.
you see it, you think, oh no, it doesn't sound like that. But if you just hear it,
mm-hmm.
It's amazing what, like the apps and things that you can do. But I can't say that there's one sort of online one that
okay.
I use. I do use the Pandora
mm-hmm.
little
yep,
box to
yep.
practice, right. And I plug that into my laptop, and that's more for being on the road and touring for convenience. But I don't record with it. But
okay.
my friends have.
Yeah, yeah.
You
it's
know.
Just interesting. It's just interesting because as the industry keeps changing.
I know, it keeps going digital.
It does.
I know.
It does. And
I like to physically...
I'm with you.
And I'm concerned, I get concerned about power.
Mm-hmm.
What if, you know, I always think about plan B.
Yes.
Because I'm usually my own roadie
mm-hmm.
For the most part. And even if I do have a roadie, I still want to know what's going up, what's going on with my signal flow. Because if something goes wrong, or even the club has weird power,
yes.
gain issues,
right.
I got to go for plan B, plan C. Which is usually a piece of hardware.
Right. It's so true. It's so true. You know, that's the thing. When you're used to touring and things, you always got to have a plan A, B, and C.
Yes.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, you are in control. You're
yeah.
in charge.
Yeah.
And especially being a chick, I feel
yeah.
like you're even more so.
It's more pressure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's
and
far
if
more
I get
pressure.
Any feedback, it's like, everybody, it happens to everybody.
Right, right.
You know, you can't completely control it. I mean, I haven't been on the huge tours where I got the whole crew,
mm-hmm.
you know, where that can, you know, be avoided. But, you know, you just have to be able to know all your stuff, you know.
Absolutely. And
so,
fix it all.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
gosh.
I have a whole setup in my my kitchen is basically my workspace.
I
have
it.
One of these gigantic, it's a Husky, like a toolbox.
Yep, yep,
and all
yep.
My,
with
my
the
pedals
drawers
are in
and
it.
All that
I
stuff.
Have tools in
yep,
it.
Yep.
I have a soldering iron. For although I'm told by my friend not to solder ever again because I soldered a speaker cable and I blew up my head.
Oh my gosh.
Because I didn't do the solders.
Oh my
you know,
gosh.
I went I'm like I can do this. I
yeah,
went to Tour
yeah.
Supply and I got the quarter inch jack. I got all the jacks. I got the good cabling and my soldering was so atrocious.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, look what I did. It was like big
all
glops
mangled.
Of solder,
yeah.
right?
Well, you know, I give you credit for trying, because I wouldn't even try. At that point, I'd be like, help me.
I can solder pickups. I can swap out pickups. Yeah. But I cannot, and I'm told not to do cables.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Now, we touched briefly on guitars, but what are you playing right now?
This question is asked, and it's a touchy question as far as manufacturers, because I have my loyalty. But at the same time, it's to me, it's like trying to pick, how can you pick one sound or one?
You can't. I can't. It's like shoes.
I'm glad you went there, because I was going to say it's like having one pair. You can't.
Every one has a different tone. It's like a red dress, a blue dress, so on and so forth. You know, husband asked me, why do you have 22 guitars? Right. Because they have to match what I'm wearing, and it has to have the tone also of what I'm playing. You know, so tell me about your favorites in your grouping of guitars.
My favorite is my, it's a 68 Fender Strat. And it's actually modified from 1980, or not modified, it is a reissue from 1987.
Okay.
So it's in that, when I worked at Fender, they had just put out these guitars.
I can't believe you worked at Fender. Like, seriously? Like, I want to come back as you next time.
And R&D was awesome, because that's research and development.
Right,
so
right.
You know, I'll tell you a story about one of the amplifiers when I left, but that was just another awesome, it was just meant to be, place, right time.
Absolutely.
You know, and then that's what part of this industry is.
It is.
But at that time, so they had just launched in 1987, these 68 reissue Fender Strats, and so I got that, and it's just been my favorite. I constantly am having it worked on. I've had it refretted. I've had it modified with, it has Seymour Duncan pickups in it. I love that guitar. It's just it has a maple neck, so that's my favorite. Now I'm back to it, especially playing jazz and stuff. It just sounds right, and it's quiet. And of course, my Gibsons. I love Gibson.
Oh,
and
they're amazing.
You know, but my only issue is the weight.
Yes.
You know, I have mine are modified. It's called my gold top is my Franken Gibson, because it's completely modified, and I love the guitars. I like to have a whammy. Mm-hmm. So, but it's not hollowed out. It's a solid body, and it weighs a ton.
Yeah.
And that has a FU Floyd bridge on it.
Okay.
Which is like a Floyd Rose, but it's manufactured by FU Tone. I'm going back and forth. I'm also now really interested in Sur guitars, because those are just beautiful guitars. But my problem is, there's not a left-handed one I can try,
right?
So that I can get a feel for it. Now I've learned my ways of how to flip it upside down,
yes.
And I can not play right-handed, but I can feel it, and I can get a feel for the action and how it, you know, how it sits, and I can play one string,
right?
Are you ambidextrous?
I am.
Okay,
I am, but I can't play right-handed.
You can't. Okay.
Oh, girl, no! I sound horrible. I sound like, you know, a 4-year-old who just doesn't work.
My goal was always, okay, let me do one song right hand or one lick, so I can just sort of do a flashy thing.
Yeah.
Or just when I want to try a guitar, I can't.
I can't either. Forget
you
about
know,
it.
One of the thing is my nails. I use my acrylics for picking, and I use this a lot in picking. So, you know, it's not like I do have a little bit of length there.
Yeah.
And so if I go this way, I can't even, you know, and this is always my set, is I have my short nubs and then this, and I use it, you know, so I can't do that.
It's so funny, like all these little tips and
but
tricks.
But it is hard for me to, I mean, if I had access to more left-handed guitars, I may have more variety with my selection, but I love my Fenders and I love my Gibsons, I love both families.
Yeah, they're great companies, and they make
people,
great
people, and
absolutely.
They've been good to me, and I like the sound of both the guitars, so so I haven't veered too much off of that. Like, I've never played, you know, an Ivan Mez. I've never played a Paul Reed Smith. And those are lovely guitars.
They are. I had to switch from the Gibson. I love Gibson. But I had to switch from the Gibson to the Paul Reed Smith Live because of the weight.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the weight. It's much lighter.
Uh-huh.
But for recording, I love the Gibson.
Right.
Like, you just can't get away from it.
Yeah.
You know, it just has a beautiful, clean tone. And, you know, I don't know how they make those guitars just sound so luscious.
Yeah.
But I love them.
It's the wood. It's the run of the wood. It's the year.
Yep.
All those the electronics, everything that goes into them, it's amazing how even a year or a run makes a big difference. It does.
It's so true. It's so true. And I want to switch back to business for just a little bit. A lot of our listeners are interested in getting endorsement deals. I think that's probably the number one question. I have three questions for you, and they're ones that I get all the time in the email. Number one is people always want to know how they get endorsement deals.
Right.
And I think that people have a misconception about what it means to have an endorsement deal.
Yes.
So can you speak a little bit about that?
It's a huge honor, first of all.
Absolutely.
It's not as glamorous as some, when people think endorsements like Nike and all the sports, mm-hmm. it's not like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of my professional players that can't afford to buy, or that can't really, things can be tight depending on if they're on tour or off tour. Some of the manufacturers that they play for, they buy them and they're endorsed by them, but they buy them. They buy them at a discount,
mm-hmm.
but they support the manufacturer. I do a lot of that myself, so it's not a full deal. Yes, I've been given equipment,
mm-hmm.
but usually I also want to support my manufacturer. So my first deals, I packaged myself professionally in the sense of I had my CD, I had done enough playing out. We had label interest. At that time, we weren't signed early on. Now it's done differently. I'll go to what I did and what I do now. And just had enough buzz.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of manufacturers want where is their product going to be seen?
Yes.
So for them, it has to be also an equal deal in the sense of you're playing our product, so how are you going to represent it? Where is it going to be exposed? Talk about it wherever you're being interviewed, just get the maximum exposure for their product, and also they could be artists, depending on the type of music, what kind of, how it represents them.
Mm-hmm.
They also may choose their artists that way as well. Choose a manufacturer that also represents your music and you. That's what I did back in the day. Now, a lot of times it comes down to exposure, I think, and credibility. What you're doing and how long you've been playing, and you approach them and find out what their deal is, how do I get represented, don't expect a lot of freebies, and don't expect to be paid, because I think you're going in with the wrong expectations of why you really want to be sponsored by that product. Also volunteer doing clinics representing the product at NAMM and trade shows. And then get footage of that showing, or do demos of it. If you already have one piece of their equipment, do a demo on it, get it up on YouTube, get hits. Those are my suggestions.
Those are great. Thank you so much. That's a question that comes through a lot, because people see, you're endorsed by these companies, and they don't really understand what that means.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean necessarily that they're shipping me a guitar every week. That would be amazing, and if you want to do it, I can give you my address. But in the meantime,
and you're not being paid. I mean, you're not necessarily people.
You're not being paid.
They do it differently.
Yes,
but it is an honor to be endorsed.
It's an absolute honor.
Yeah,
these companies
want to put you on your website.
Absolutely.
Like, when I go up on my manufacturer's website, I'm proud of that.
Yes,
I feel like that was a lot of that was a lot of years and of getting to that point. And even my first deals. I had a little different circumstances because I started out doing A&R at Randall and Fender, and I was in with the manufacturers. But I'm still not, it's not like I can go out there and say I'm Fender. I mean, it's still not, they know me and they know that I'm out there, but there's also how many other hundreds of artists,
Yes.
I just have a long history with Fender.
Yes. They're great people, I've worked with them for quite a few years, and they're incredible. Like,
mm-hmm.
everything you need, like, they have your back.
Yeah.
And I totally appreciate that. And I think that some of the artists coming up, who just want an endorsement deal, you really need to look at it as a partnership.
Yes.
Because it is 100% a partnership. They're not only giving you gear free or at a discount. In exchange, you're promoting them as well. And do you believe in the company's values and so on and so forth? And right. Fender and Gibson, those are some fabulous yeah. companies. And Taylor, Paul Reed Smith, I've yes. worked with. You've right. worked with Seymour Duncan. Yeah. You know, there's some great manufacturers out there, and they really take care of their artists.
Yeah.
But you have to come to the table
yeah.
with something that they want as
right.
well.
Right.
So thank you so much
yeah,
for that
absolutely.
That advice, because that's really, really key. And another question that a lot of people ask, and I want to give this question to you. See, you guys, you don't understand. Like, when people come in, you get to hear it straight from them as well, you know. And Brianna has so much experience. And, you know, people always want to know, like, how do you get your music and films?
Oh, boy. I mean, I'm still battling that. And, you know, my projects, like, over the past couple years, it's always been music production has always been a love.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of times we can't, okay, where's the money in music?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the labels are not what they used to be, and you go off tour and you're not playing. You know, the reality is we still need a job,
mm-hmm.
you know? I mean, over the years, I've been doing production and working for 20th Century Fox and Sony Pictures for years, the last like 20 years. And wherever there is an opportunity, sort of unrelated to the studio, you know, I'm there. I have the connections. I'm networking, and that's where I'll, you know, submit my music for things. A lot of my stuff is more independent, and that's sort of where you need to be to get your foot in the door. And there's a lot of work there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, building your musical library, that's where it starts. You know, learn recording, because that's where music placement is where a lot of musicians need to make. That's where you go pretty much to make money.
Absolutely.
So it's building your library. It's being broad with your music, learning all other styles, because that's what it's going to call for. They need something maybe called for, like a country background or a pop background or things that are outside of your comfort zone. And even if you make something up that's like a minute or, you know, 30 seconds, it's going to be a bumper or something. It's just an idea to give the music supervisor an idea of what you sound like and what you can do. You know, budget, you can control it by doing your own productions. So if you learn how to do, you know, the recording of it, the mixing of it, there's no other person, no middleman. So it's just more for you.
That's great. Now, I'm going to circle back with that even deeper. You're talking about music production. What are some basic things for people who are maybe just starting to set up a studio at home? What are some basic things that you would recommend that they start with?
Basic things is find out, first of all, your let me try and
these are music geeks. We're all geeks, so go there.
A good computer, first of all,
for sure.
Learn your recording software, either if it's Pro Tools, Logic, Digital Performer. Learn your platform and learn it well. That's going to be the most important thing. When I started out, I talked to every one of my music producers, engineers, and just took meetings and asked them all kinds of questions, engineering questions. I mean, I'm still learning, and
we never stop, because
yeah,
the software keeps upgrading,
right?
You know.
And just keeping yourself networked and talking to people, because you can, reading manuals are great, but they also can be overwhelming and not that interesting. So there's a lot of forms out there. Recording engineering discussion forms that you can learn. There's a lot of online classes. I've taken a lot of those. And stay networked within that industry. So that would be my biggest advice, is the forms, online forms, because a lot of times it's also late hours.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you are working, it's not like, oh well, I can't do it during those hours. But the beauty of the internet is that any time you can reach out to a forum and ask these questions, or you get stuck on a project and it's late night hours. I've done that numerous times. YouTube is also a really great place to view master classes. Yeah, there's a lot of master classes.
Okay.
Or if you can also subscribe to them. I think there's one, it's called masterclass.com, and it's guitar and a lot of audio. And it's really a good one.
Oh, that's great. That's great to know. And I understand you're going to be coming out with some guitar tutorials
I'm
as well.
Them, yeah, I'm doing them now. I started doing them. I did some teaching. Well, I've taught over the years. And about 4 years ago, I substituted at UCLA. Mm-hmm. I was teaching guitar there. That was a big deal for me.
Wow.
And from that, I did some master classes, and then I did some work for Dangerous Guitar,
okay,
which is an online publication, a subscribed publication for guitar. And I have a home studio. I'm like, you know, why not do these?
I love it.
You know, I have a lot of, you know, a lot of instructional stuff that I do for my students. I figured, why not just start doing a series of them? I don't know yet if it's going to be a subscribed base or not.
Keep us in the loop so we can share with our listeners and our community. But, you know, I want to get back to the music. We've been talking a lot about gear, and you guys know I'm a gearhead. I, like, love the gear, so we went down that road because we can with Brianna. It's a lot of fun. But let's get back to the music. You know, when I first met you, you and your band Absinthe came to Guitar Goddess when we launched 7 years ago, and we were honoring Trish from Daisy Rock Guitars, because I feel like she is the mother of the female guitarist community, and that she brought us all together by bringing us some guitars. So, you know, you perform with your band Absinthe, and I just want you to share a couple of the tracks with us today. Tell us what you...
I think we have dialed up, we have... Let's see. Now this is a different lineup. This is Cherokee Vocal. Cherokee Fortune on vocals. And
love
she's
her.
Sort of been, you know, with many female bands, you change over the years. Your style changes, your lineup changes. So the last 3 years of the band, Cherokee led the band. And that's sort of, I think, those years we came into our own. So this is more bluesy driven.
Cool.
There's a little bit of a metal edge there, a little bit of sort of punky sound. But I think the one you're... Is it Filthy?
Save Your Breath.
Oh, Save Your Breath. Okay, yeah. So that's Save Your
Breath.
So
tell us about that song. Tell us what it's all about, and then we'll get into it.
that's the mind of Cherokee Fortune. She does the lyrics.
All right.
I write the music, and she does the lyrics. So I don't know what she was thinking when she wrote that up. I come up with a riff, and then, you know.
And then she takes it from
there.
Yeah,
and then she takes it from there.
All right, well, let's take a listen. Was awesome. Wow. That was really incredible.
There's a video of that online.
Really?
It's called Save Your Breath. I actually produced that and filmed it. We filmed it all over LA. Oh, actually in the subway.
Wow.
In the metro subway.
Really?
So we filmed it there, and so there's a video online.
Oh my gosh, we'll have to go and check that out. Okay, I want to hear another track. So what do we have next?
Pull the Trigger.
Pull the Trigger. All right, here we go.
Heavy hammer, no compromise. You know it's juicy when you can't.
great. What are you playing on this?
This is playing as far as
guitar.
Yeah. That's my Gibson.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, that's fat sound.
Yeah, listen to this. This is great. Trigger by our guest Brianna Alexis and her band Absinthe. That was rockin'.
That has a really nice lineup on it. Those are we have Jen Oberle on bass, who's just an amazing session player, plays with everybody in town. Lux on drums. We have Terry McCoy, who's also a co-writer at the song. We were doing dual guitars at that time, and led by Cherokee Fortune, who is an Ultimate Jam regular on the Tuesday nights.
That's incredible. I love it. I love
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Like, it's just so much fun to watch you perform live and to just hear the music as well. Where can we see you next? What's happening?
We have some stuff in the works, but no dates are posted yet.
Okay.
So yeah, we're just, the stuff that we're listening to is a few years old. So we have a new sound. I think it's more bluesy rock driven. Coming into our own.
Yeah.
And Cherokee's been busy with her projects. I've been busy with my studio projects. Hopefully next year we'll have some dates in line, but nothing at the end of this year.
Okay. Well, yeah. Keep us.
Maybe NAMM.
Oh, okay. So NAMM, we got NAMM in January, fingers
right.
crossed. Also, you know, keep us in mind, we are going to be taking the Guitar Goddess tour back out on the road next year.
Really,
so yes. So we'd love to have Absinthe.
Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome.
Oh my God, that'd be so incredible.
Maybe we'll kick it off with you guys.
Right.
Like, I'd love that.
Two left-handed guitarists. Like, they're not going to know what to do.
We can do a collaboration.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we're going to have so much fun.
That would be so much fun.
Well, thank you so much for coming today.
So
this has been so
me.
Much fun. It's so great to like catch up and hear everything you've been working on, and tell everybody how they can connect to you.
They can reach me through my website, which is briannalexis.com. I'm also over social media, Brianna Alexis Guitar, because there are other Brianna Alexises.
I saw that.
Yeah.
How dare they?
Yeah, how dare they, right? So Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, Brianna Alexis Guitar.
Brianna Alexis Guitar. That's how you guys can find her. Make sure you follow her, listen to her music. They have new projects they're working on right now, and maybe a performance at NAMM.
Yeah,
like, look,
hopefully.
We're just going to put it out
sponsors,
there.
Yeah.
We're just going to put it out there. NAMM, we want to see Brianna and
we'll
Absinthe.
Like 27th year there.
No.
Yeah. I used to demo there for the guitar manufacturers I represented back in the day.
That is incredible.
So I know.
And you're so young. You started like 10.
I hate to date myself, but you know what? Those were years earned.
Yes.
And I'm proud of them.
You know what? I love seeing your modeling photos too.
Oh,
I was like, oh my gosh, she's done everything.
Yeah.
She's been a model. She's been, you know, R&D for guitar companies, a jazz guitarist, a rock guitarist, a composer for film and television. What haven't you done?
Well, there's more to come.
I'm
not
sure.
Over.
I'm
it's
sure.
Not over till Fat Lady Sings, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah. So you guys, you've been listening to Guitar Goddess with our very special guest today, Brianna Alexis. And we hope to see you guys back here same time next week for another episode of Guitar Goddess.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being
Appreciate
here.
It.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Sorry for being all over the map.